Okay, I'm going to start this meeting. And I want to thank everybody who is here for, you know, participating at this last minute kind of meeting setup. But we got some great comments to start with as far as looking at this. I think Josh's comment about making sure that whatever we're talking about is related or does is in agreement with what our general plan vision and the general plan in general. I think our biggest task is to figure out what we have in our land use that is not really allowing for some of the things that maybe we would want to have in our as options. And the PC is actually working on this kind of through our, what do you call Lee Nellis, our advisor. And he, so we're kind of working through the more of the what needs to be changed, kind of where the areas in our general plan that could be changed towards that. So we don't need to come up with any verbiage as far as, you know, anything that would go in the ordinances. We just need to identify the things that we feel would be helpful in this process of attainable housing and our general plan and our, you know, what we want to allow to happen, basically, or have considered. So I'm gonna. Has everybody kind of gone through the general plan as far as those things that are the statements and goals? And there's some.
You're just here. I did.
Okay, great. I marked a few things that I thought were of interest for people to review a little bit. And one is I was thinking of like what is allowed as far as the general plan goes. And there is something on housing in Chapter 8. There's a mention of the school, and in the commercial, there's page. There's also a mention of actual housing on a business with a business. So, in the general plan, we have those areas that we can look at. Let's see on the housing. Let's see. So, Peg, I think let's go to the ideas that came out of the emails that we got. I have that page listed there too. I think you brought it up before.
Yeah, can you, Rats? Okay.
And can I just open it up? Is there any comments before we go through the list of that was already brought up as far as things to look at and things to consider when getting this process started?
I think it's interesting that in our vision statement in the general plan that secondary objectives are supporting an economically viable future by encouraging local land-based economy and affordable opportunities for future generations are secondary objectives, not primary. Primary objectives are basically maintaining why we're all here now. So I think that's kind of interesting and worth noting.
That in our general plan, that is, that if the first priority is
maintaining the vision of what we have now, and then secondary to that is, well, hopefully we can do all these other things too. But I mean, the intention behind that is let's not compromise
what we have now
right, in order to achieve these things.
Right. Understandable.
Is there anything wrong with that?
No, I'm just pointing it out. I just I mean, I helped do that during the, you know, we were doing that. And then I was like, oh, wow, look, we were very clear. I guess.
And I think that's true. But yes, I think that is true.
I think just bringing it to the attention is important.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Anybody else?
Can I make a comment on your list of things? I moved up middle of the page where it came off Jabe's list. What are our short and long-term goals and objectives? And I just wanted to highlight that because I know that Lee Nellis in Planning Commission says you start with, you know, where do you want to end up? What do you want to achieve? Anything, you know, you can start, you can bury yourself into wordsmithing things before you even have a clear idea of what it is you are actually trying to achieve. So I just want to underscore what Jabe has already said, keeping the short and long-term goals and objectives well identified up front and referred to frequently. That's all.
And I guess, I mean, I would actually recommend taking a step back, which is in my comments in here that they weren't identified to me, but I said define the problem. So having long-term goals and objectives are great, but you need to understand what problem you're solving first.
Yep.
So I think spending some time identifying, okay, here's our vision statement, here's what the general plan says, here's what we want to do. Like what problems are there in existence, even within the general plan, that make achieving these things hard? Or, you know, is how big is the problem? Do we even have a problem? How big is the problem? Who's the problem affecting? I mean, I think those are all really relevant topics for consideration.
Yes.
Before we dig into, you know, drawing maps or whatever.
Could I add something to that?
Sure.
I agree with that 100%, by the way.
Just in case, can you just put this on a bit here?
Okay.
Thanks.
This is Mark Nelson.
Okay, I just wanted to say I agree with what Josh just had to say. I just think I'd like to add to that. I think we really haven't done much talking about what the threats are coming our way. And I think we, you know, that needs to be part of the discussion, because we need to see what's happening, where it's coming from, and how it's going to affect these things that we were talking about. So, you know, I'd like to make sure that we cover some of those things. I know I read the legal pages of the paper every week. I see, you know, agriculture being converted to commercial and real estate development. I think it was just this last issue, there were 7 conversions from Panguitch, right?
Uh-huh.
Then also, I noticed on the Insider on the 22nd of December, there was an article in LOA about a 60 unit subdivision in LOA.
Right.
Right. And so these are the things that are kind of happening. I think we've all seen them. I had to make several trips to St. George last summer, and so I made a lot of trips. And I always go through Zion because it's the shortest way, and I don't like the freeway. But I'm just kind of aghast what I saw happen down there. I hadn't been down there for a few years. And I don't know if any of you have been to Zion lately, but
the whole east side.
Well, I mean, I generally kind of avoided it, but I thought I'd better bite the bullet and go look and see what's happening. And I was kind of shocked. And
the upper part, the part before you get into the
part? I mean, you know, the Kolob Terrace area, you know, I don't know if you've been up there looking around to see what's happening there. You know, Springdale, Rockville, all those towns, you know, from there on down to St. George, right? But now there's a new proposal called the North Zion Project, or the East Zion Project, I'm sorry, up by Mount Carmel, that, if any of you have read what's happening there is, you know, since everything else is built out, now they're going to start building an East Zion, which was relatively untouched until now. But that's actually a proposal that's been embraced by the park.
Sure.
Right. And So these are some of the things that we need to be thinking about when we, guide Boulder, and we want to try and avoid some of those pitfalls if you can, I would think.
Okay.
Anyway, so I'll just sum up by saying that I think we need to really think a lot about these threats and consequences to what we might be planning.
Okay. Great. Anybody else?
Maybe we need to start actually with Jabe's suggestion that we actually put up a physical map and start talking about what percentage of the space now not developed do we want to develop percentage-wise, and then maybe also look at what we would consider a maximum population size. Because I think that's what I'm hearing from the other people commenting, that build houses and they will come. So, and then I think what's going to be a defining factor for the number of people that can live here and have some sort of residence is, as the general plan says, we need to have an assessment of all possible services that will be impacted. And I see the most extreme being water. I think we should have the water company involved telling us the maximum number of households that can be served with the current supply of water. And then I think the areas that we think might be best suited for development, whatever scale, probably needs to have an assessment of the perkability of the land and whether wells and septic systems are even possible and to what degree. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Judith. I think the map is not an option at this meeting, but we'll definitely take it into the next meeting to see if we can do something with that.
I do think this is a conversation we brought up because Mark and I were involved in the general plan revision that brought this version to the table. And we brought up the idea of and had discussions around population growth in rates, maximum population over whatever time frame. I think that's super, super critical in defining what the problem is. So, for example, do we need another 150 5-acre lots in Boulder for absentee landowners? Is that a problem that we have in this town that needs solved? Does anyone believe that's true? Probably not. Probably no one in this town thinks that is an issue. So if we talk about population growth, 2% population growth is doubling every 20 years. If you look at what Boulder's been doing, it's very low. You're talking a few people per year on average every year. And then that would basically be like maybe one additional lot in town per year for a family. And that's pretty much what we've been doing roughly for a long time now. And is that problematic? I mean, does anyone believe that that's a problem? Does anyone believe we need more growth than we've experienced, say, in the last 10 years? I mean, I don't think so. And then if along that line, then what kind of growth do we want to see? And that's where the threats come in. There's a real threat that growth could be, for example, another Black Ledge type of development where, it's not creating the foundation of the community that we need to have a multi-generational community here because it's not accessible to anyone that's young and working and has a family. So I think we should all be thinking about, look at the population growth we've had, say, do we want it to be any higher? And probably, if anything, even in terms of our resources, such as water, probably needs to be lower than it has been historically. And I don't know what the max could possibly be, but I mean, I think if our population doubled in our lifetime, that would be pretty astronomical growth for most of us. I mean, some younger than others, I guess, but overall, even your kid's lifetime, that would be like a lot, right? So the nice thing about Boulder is like one house goes a really long way here, right? Like one rental house goes a really long way here, where we don't need another 50 lot subdivision like where I live to solve these problems. It's really just one or two lots here or there every year or two is like a lot for where we're at. So I think we should all be thinking about that in the back of our minds, that we probably want a very low population growth rate to maintain what we have here now and why we're here. And that all the growth, we should probably focus the growth as much as possible moving forward on younger working class families somehow, whether that be deed restrictions on income, or there's all kinds of options you can have around forcing the development to be in more of a multi-generational working class capacity that actually builds a community of entrepreneurs and land-based stewards and that sort of thing. And that helps, that allows some development while also keeping away the bigger threats that are very real and looming.
I agree. Okay, so anybody else? Anyone else in this have any comments? Okay, Judith?
I think backing up onto those comments, are we not looking at this issue because we have individuals who are here that already that are not counted in the population numbers but want to be here and could be working here if they had some place to reside?
Great, thank you. Jade? Dave, did you have something?
Sorry, I'm not as well versed in Zoom, and I thought I was unmuted. So one of the things I noticed in the general plan from 2010 to 2020 that was really caught my attention was the number of homes that are available in 2010 and for rent, or I'm sorry, the number of homes available, families, and then how many homes were unoccupied. I hope I have that, those categorizations correct. And then in 2020, the unoccupied went way up. So we have all these new homes, or maybe they're not new, but we have a lot of homes that are unoccupied. And so one of my thoughts then that I put down is, how many homes do we have out there that are unoccupied? And are there homes out there that could be occupied? I think the wave is changing in Boulder with, you know, when I came in, it's like, you know, you had to pay your dues to get a rental. Now there's just nothing. And a lot of people don't want to, but there's such a housing shortage. Is there, may it be worth our effort to kind of address that with the community and homeowners that maybe have homes but aren't renting them and they are available? Some, I'm sure a lot of them are not available, but how many are? Do we know that? Would that make up some of those differences that Josh is talking about? If you're talking one, two, three homes for a number of folks, that could be housing right there. So I think we have some opportunities to look at what the existing inventory is. I don't think it's going to be a huge option, but it's one of the things I wanted to point out that I keyed in on. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Great. So I'll go with Peg. Go ahead.
A couple months ago, Matt Cochran and Planning Commission did, he presented a count and it's probably plus or minus count, but it was, he said 46. there were 46 unoccupied dwellings. I don't know if that included the super trashy dump places ought to be torn down. I don't know if it includes that or not, but he's definitely including the part-time lived in 4th of July, you know, residents. He's including all of that. So 46 dwellings in town that are unoccupied on a normal basis.
And I think that those numbers were also included in, I didn't attend the housing thing because I had a conflict, but I did listen to the recording, but Neighbor Works, Charlene talked about that as well, and you know those numbers.
It's the same at the county. It's about half,
yeah,
40 something percent for the whole county. Yeah. Panguitch, Escalante is the same. The giant problem.
They just did a count in St. George. 27% of their homes are considered upper end vacation or part-time residences.
Yeah, 27%.
Wow, that's a lot. When you think of how much is down there, 27% is a lot.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual to Boulder.
Right. No, I don't think any of this is unusual.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's a lot you can do about that,
yeah,
especially now with the onset of Airbnb, because if somebody looks at renting, if they want to rent at all,
yeah,
and they want to go Airbnb because it gives more flexibility and more income. So that's a problem. I wish,
yeah,
there was a
solution. And we brought it up, like Jerry Taylor
brought
it
actually,
up.
There is actually in town a limit on how many Airbnbs.
I know, and that helps.
It does help. It doesn't seem to have raised the rentals.
No.
Does anyone remember the total number of homes or dwellings currently? Because I know Matt's number was the amount that were vacant, but it's not the percentage. And I know that Michela's report, does anyone recall that number?
I tried to look it up.
I can't remember.
So that's something to look at so we can figure out percentage versus a number.
But we do,
right?
Have those numbers.
Yeah, I know we do, yeah, but it might be worth us looking
at. But I think it's roughly like
40,
I bet it's about 100 houses and 46 of them are unoccupied, roughly.
I think there was a little more than 100.
But close.
But close.
Yeah.
And I don't think that even counts along with the part-time that are considered occupied, but.
Yeah,
a year about half the time. So.
Well, I think we wanted a count of every residential, you know, house, right, dwelling for those numbers when we did that RSTR. And that's why it took her so long to do it. It took her several months to do it because she was trying to find out. So it was on record.
Yeah, I know we've had
it. It's
just worth us looking it up just to get those numbers and bring them back to the present, like, forefront.
Yeah, and Jerry Taylor knows it's an issue. And, you know, it's like we even brought up at the housing meeting, it's like, can't you have some special tax or something? I mean, dear Lord, you know, motivate them to do something instead of just sit on it.
When he forgot to bring up the fact that actually there's a tax break for second homes. That's one reason we have so many.
There's a tax break?
Yes.
Oh, that shouldn't be the case.
Yeah, there's a tax break for second homes.
Huh. Okay, well, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, so I guess, speaking to Jabe's point, I mean, I think it would be great if we could take 10% of those out and turn them into rentals. It would largely solve our rental problem for the short term. But, you know, how do you incentivize people to do that?
I think that's going to be a big key, is what are some realistic incentives, because people talk about them, but then we don't have any power to actually do them. And so it's realistic ones, not just idealistic ones.
Yeah.
Hey, you could reach out to those people that have those and say, what would be an incentive to you to do that? And see if you've got any responses.
That's a good idea.
A subjective response.
Is there anything that would motivate you?
Is there anything?
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that part of the reason to get together is, like, I don't think that the way the land is, or how to get those incentives, is something that maybe the town can actually help with in some way. I'm not sure how exactly that is. But even to the point of, like, how do you incentivize somebody to actually allow for someone to purchase a piece of property, right? That's in smaller than the 5-acre lot, and still you know, that's an incentive. If someone was interested in purchasing or selling a piece of property that was smaller than what is allowed within their range, so how do we incentivize that? We talked in planning, we talked about clustering. That seems to be not really our cluster development thing, is not a very is not well enough defined so that it does incentivize people to allow property that does not stick with the market value and is passed on to more of a families, or, you know, stays within some kind of reasonable affordability. And I think the affordability of property in this town is a problem, because it's going to be people who want to come in and put in a second home or whatever that will start us further down this path of unoccupied non-community members in our community, which is, so I think that is a big place to start looking at what we can do to incentivize that kind of development.
I think we still have to, I still think clustering has potential. It really hasn't been tested or tried, and I don't think we should write it off.
No, I think, but I do think
there
that.
I mean, there is, at least with clustering, there are incentives there, right? I mean, obvious incentives, and a more comprehensive, organized approach, rather than allowing somebody just to cut off a couple acres here, a couple acres here. I need more money. A few years down the road, a couple acres here. That's a very unorganized approach. It's kind of a piecemeal approach, and I don't think that really is going to give us a good comprehensive planning picture. You understand what I'm saying?
I think that the landowners that are doing that, right, mm-hmm. are the ones that, you know, that's within their rights. They have the ability to do a division of 5 acres at this point.
Yeah, I do think it's worth also, like, when we're talking about, like, seeking out realistic incentives, figuring out what would motivate people to do clustering. And because I think that is, you know, I do think it is a long-term, it's a really great strategy, and it fits in with the general plan, but we haven't been utilizing it because, again, it's not to the benefit of the seller. And so there has to be that conversation out there too.
And it, you know, and there's this obvious thing that's happened now with first the unbelievable appreciation of property over a short period of time.
Yeah.
And now high interest rates to go with that. It just really makes it very complicated. Yeah. and even with incentives, it doesn't. It's hard to make it work in terms of, like, the words affordable, right? You know, and you know, I read Tom Hoyt's letters, his response to why he thought his project didn't work. Well, I mean, when he proposed the project, you know, I did the math. Josie Muse did the math. We came up with the same figures. That it was not. It was hard to say, call that affordable housing, because, you know, lots were going to be $80,000 for 1 acre lot, which was twice as much as 1 acre lots were going for when he proposed this. And then if you look at standard, I talked to Phil about what it cost to build like a 1200 square foot home with, you know, the other problems, increase in materials, right? And it came. It was going to be, you know, you'd be into it about $300,000. Well, then, you know, so I went to real estate school back in the day when I lived up north. So I know something about financing. And when I looked at what it would cost for somebody to do conventional financing on that and what the kind of income would have to be, it was, you know, you'd have to have a combined income if it was a couple, you know, of $80,000. Well, that puts a different face on the whole concept of affordable housing, especially for Boulder, when the people that probably need the affordable housing are seasonal workers, you know, people involved in jobs that don't pay those kind of wages. And so, to me, I didn't see it as an affordable housing project. I saw it more of a project for, you know, upper middle class people, not poor people or people that need affordable housing. I mean, in my sense, what affordable housing is, affordable for upper middle class, but not affordable for the service class, which is kind of seems to be where the demand is coming from, right?
Right.
Most yeah, people. Totally.
So, you know, it makes sense to me to really look at what we've talked about before is to look harder at, you know, who hires the people that hire the service industry to help provide housing the industry. And I have to give Blake credit for providing, you know, some housing, and Dave Mock for providing some housing for their employees.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I was surprised to hear that Blake didn't even fill up her housing, but she was looking very much, but you know, she had
some housing.
So she had housing in the summer. It's my understanding she had housing that was not used.
Uh-huh.
And, but I think that that's something we really have to think about is trying to bring, if, you know, if there's more people come and want to do commercial, I think we need to kind of try and get them to participate in helping provide the housing, because of this disparity between what the service industry can afford and what's available. And it really, to me, it makes sense for an employer to get involved, because, you know, they can help their service people stay, you know, and perform.
Judith's so trying to talk sense. Just so everyone yeah. knows. And those that are sitting here, we just periodically should look up to make sure. And people that are on Zoom, if you're trying to talk and you're not getting to, just unmute yourself and jump in.
Okay, so Judith, go ahead.
I support that position. I think the starting point is working directly with local businesses that are needing housing for their employees. And they already have land that I think most of the community would be very comfortable seeing further development upon it. And to talk about structures for families, et cetera, unless we get the employment opportunities here that will support a working family, there's probably no reason to be trying to develop housing for that demographic. And I think if you were to start to subdivide and sell lots, we would be back to the second home buyer. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Judith. All right, so moving forward, how about if we address the list that we have in front of us in relationship to what has already been talked about. I'm sorry, I emailed a list.
Yeah, okay, Debbie, you're gonna talk about the list?
Yeah, so just with the ideas that we've actually talked about right now. So the on-site housing at, pardon? Sure, BES. There, can I just make a comment on that? This has been a problem for this school, in that to get a teacher to actually move here has been difficult because of housing issues. So the idea was that perhaps the school would be willing to put something on the school grounds. So if you want to continue.
Yeah, and it all started, it was actually Lexi asked me if what were the chances of getting a pad, and if she could get a camper and put it on the property to let go of her housing. And then it started going from there, and I've been talking to the superintendent and business administrator, and we were able in November to get some movement on it. And then in January at the last community council meeting, we do have commitment from the school district for the property that's between that trailer of Blake's that's on the Coombs' property and the school, which mostly rabbit brush now, is the land itself and the grounds to be able to put in some proposals, at the lowest end of it being pads, highest end is something else. And the community council met last Wednesday and had made a subcommittee to move forward with this. And the subcommittee is Josh Ellis, John Varant, Jared Grimes,
and Andrea
Rice. Thank you. That was one. And I don't know if you knew the joke, but you don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was why.
She did pass me the map.
I was hesitantly said your name. And so they'll keep working both with the school district and the planning commission, because obviously, as it goes, because it's not commercial and it's not private property, it currently would be illegal with the current town ordinances. So it's going to be figuring out what the shared vision is, working with the current staff, potential future staff that wants to be able to live in Boulder based on either classified or certified positions there, and get to live and have housing that is a consistent rent that is affordable. And so that's where that is, and can it work? Because it's going to take, after moving forward with funding to figure out the housing part, is working with the town for the ordinance changes to make it legal, because it's not commercial. And it's similar to what Jamie's working with, because that's state owned and it's Parks Department, and so there's different regulations there. She's working with the state. We would have, because Garfield County School District owns that property, they did write a formal letter in agreement with the property, but not with the financial support at this time.
Yeah, I think that is a really good segue to wrap around to kind of Mark's comments about Tom's development. At this point in time, and property values have basically doubled since he tried to do that.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, there is essentially no functional market price solution for affordable housing in Boulder. There's just no way at current land values, if you get retail, and all the young people getting land right now either got it before it doubled or are getting below market deals from the current owners, which basically probably just means that they're giving them the pre-doubling price. I don't know. I mean, it's still not even that affordable, but it's at least doable. We've crossed the threshold of it being completely undoable at this point, as far as I can tell, with any reasonable local income. I mean, the median income in Garfield County household income is 40 grand a year. That's median. So, I mean, you're talking like most of these people are barely affording rent, let alone, you know, a $1,600 a month land payment without a house on it. So I think functionally, it's probably not even really worth the time to care about a map, because the only way that any of these projects are going to actually achieve their goal is by having really cheap donated land involved, period. There's no other way around it. The school's going to donate the land. That's great. That's the easiest starting place because they've already agreed to do it pretty much. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Other than that, probably needs to be like a land trust thing going to make this a reality, because otherwise there's really no way to do it. Anyone doing it for financial incentives will not achieve our goals in this at all. So I don't know, you know, it's like we can talk about maps and look at it, but the land values, unless we're going to start building, you know, 20 unit townhouses, which we're not, you know, that's pretty much the only way you can divide the land costs into enough slices to make it approachable.
And I think some of those to consider are their renting options, not owner. Yeah. And, you know, originally people were talking about some rent to own options, but if it's something like the school's property or the state parks property, and depending how a land trust would go, they would maintain affordable rentals, which would be in essence kind of like rent control, creating a system of rent control. It's not an option of ownership, or at least at this point. And so if that's still, you know, when Jade talked about long-term versus short-term goal, if our first short-term goal is we're saying, let's solve some renting affordable housing things, and a long-term goal would be either rent to own or other things. And I know the Planning Commission worked really hard of like, okay, like Josh just stated, it's not doable. And so stop using affordable and say attainable, but it's still limiting who, right? And so that's also there. But even knowing that as a short-term goal, rental is really hard. Like, we had really great applicants that were applying to work at the school, but there was no even option, and they would come in with a salary that was beyond a paying salary. And I know, like, when we were talking about it, like, right now, the April and Zoe and Lexi are three classified employees of the school that are making hourly wages, and they're the ones that are looking for affordable rentals, right? And so using that, and so they're going to give their input to this subcommittee of what they would need and want.
Okay. Any other comments on that?
The only comment I have on that is Elena is basically working with people who are interested in having land here or someplace to live. And so for me, I'm kind of waiting to see what she comes up with too, because that's what we're looking at right now as far as the market. Is some of those people that are already here, and what are they looking for?
Okay, you know, so I did reach out to Elena on that. Thank you, Colleen, for bringing that up. She has 10 to 15 people who are looking to have housing here in Boulder. I don't know who they are, but that was kind of her ballpark figure that she had come up with. She's still working on getting more specifics on that. So that's all I have at this point.
Are those people that are working here or employed here?
They've either been working here or they've been here in some form or other, but with very unstable.
Well, I know 100 people that want to move to Boulder.
These are people who are here and have unstable living situations.
Yeah. And I would imagine that there are at least half of those people, that 15, were at the housing forum, basically, that we have. So it would be interesting to see, because what Lee was saying too was the word homesteaders came up. You know, what does that mean? You know, as far as people, what do they need here as far as, if you can't afford to buy a piece of property, can you lease a piece of property from somebody? You know, long-term leases. And that's what I think, too, sometimes is we need to look outside the box as far as trying to offer these people something that's different than what we have to offer them right now. It's, you know, like, we never talk about long-term leases with people or, I think looking in those directions too.
I can't even think of a single lease.
No, me either. And
I think people like the lease, don't they lease agriculture? Number of pieces of property.
Well, yeah, that, but I mean, I'm talking about, you're talking exactly. about something else. You're talking
but
about.
Blake, exactly. The trailer next to the school, Blake owns the trailer, I'm pretty sure, and Coons is on the property.
Right.
So it's situations like that. And you think about Torian and Phil own the property by Hills and Hollows. And for a number of summers, there were different people that worked for Blake that were renting the property and putting in trailers. You know what I mean? So those are examples.
The one
of that
advantage type. Of leases is it gives more security to both parties.
Stephanie's trying to talk.
Oh, great. Thanks, Steph. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. So there was an idea that was floated out during the housing forum about creating like a credit system that wouldn't change the population density where people with larger pieces of land could potentially like commit to putting 5 of their acres into an easement and then giving that option to build a second home on a 5-acre lot. So I wonder if something like that could then be subsidized with a grant or, you know, some other form of funding to maybe help some of the people who are already struggling financially to maintain, you know, a 5-acre lot payment with a house on it. And then those homes, you know, like a second home could be committed to being an affordable rental. I really liked that idea because it wouldn't change the population density. The people who already have 5-acre lots tend to live in places that are more densely populated already anyway. And it would be a good way to maintain some of our open space while still potentially providing some lower income housing. So that was just one of the ideas that really struck me as wise.
Lynn Ellis has talked about that more than once. And I think, Stephanie, you're on a really great track of like, what are possibilities of that, whether it's as a lease or how do grants and other funding sources work towards that, right? Because Lee's only talked about the land use end of it, not the other end of it.
5 acres is a big piece of property. A lot of people could live on an acre even, you know, be able to lease an acre or buy an acre for what they want, which would lower the cost again, even to make it a little bit more affordable.
Well, the trouble with smaller lots is that they, you know, they're cheaper, but more expensive proportionally. And then you, if you go down that path, then you're looking at, in my opinion, losing those rural values that we wanted to try and protect here.
And well, maybe there's a way to, oh, sorry to interrupt you, Mark. Maybe there's a way to just the same way we've regulated how many Airbnbs there can be or short-term rentals, you know, maybe there's a way we could float that out as like a pilot program and commit to building 2 this year. And I'm not talking about dividing, you know, I'm not talking about breaking up a lot that's 5 acres, but let someone who already owns 5 acres, kind of like we already have with ADUs, I guess, but maybe there's a way to subsidize that so that the person living there has some rental income without the exorbitant costs of building a second home. Maybe we can subsidize that in exchange for a commitment to however many years of maintaining a low rent for people who are lower income.
Bill was trying to talk and they've had their hand up for quite a while and we missed it. Sorry.
Well, can I just address this while we're on that subject?
Go ahead.
Is that it? And so this is what I was going to get to, is that we already have that and it's called ADUs. And I remember when we were debating whether we were going to allow ADUs, they were going to solve a lot of our problems. Oops.
And create a lot of problems.
And it didn't work.
Neither of those things happened.
And also I want to say, you know, really realistically, we don't have 5-acre lots anymore because of ADUs. We have 2.5-acre lots because we have two structures on there. And so that was kind of a sneaky peat thing that kind of doubled our density. And we don't want to let that happen again, I don't think. But this idea of, I think, you know, Stephanie, this idea of the ADUs needs, I don't know why it's not working. Because everybody said it was going to work. And I don't know why, with the ability of everybody to put on ADUs on their property that they already have and rent them out, they're not doing it.
Because I think people can't afford to build a second home. A lot of people can't afford to build a second home. So that's why I think maybe looking into some kind of housing grant and a commitment to keeping it as a low cost rental might be worth looking into.
Well, what you're talking about is exactly right. And so, but the word you brought up there, that's really the critical word, is subsidized. And I'm all for any kind of programs you could find to do that. But, you know, you have to acknowledge it's going to be subsidized, you know, and that's a word that everybody likes. But when you go, you know, try to find that money, it's not as easy as you'd think it would be. But I think that's, you know, if you can find a program like that and can make it work, I think that's not a bad idea to solve that problem that you pointed out.
Bill, I mean, go ahead.
This is Bill. If we're only looking at, like Josh said, in the neighborhood of 1 to 2 new dwellings a year in Boulder, if that's sufficient, and everything that's been discussed thus far in terms of that's true about the cost of land by the time you're done buying a piece of ground and the current cost of building by the time you're done, the point is well taken that it's no longer an affordable house, especially for people making the kind of wages that they do in retail or at the school. So, but if we, instead of trying to solve it all at once with a silver bullet, I think Stephanie's recommendation points to an existing mechanism. And yes, Mark, it hasn't resulted in everybody doubling the number of structures in town, or we wouldn't have a problem. But ADUs are an opportunity for people, and I see you laughing, Josh, you can follow up, but at any rate, if we took advantage of an existing ordinance that allows people who have 5-acre lots to build a second dwelling on that lot for lower income rent, and the landowners willing to do that, just like some landowners have been able to make land available to people like Elena and others that want to farm, I think that's a place to start. And that's my comment.
Yeah, so. I think to the density, the percentage density also kind of piggybacks on or adds to the appeal of clustering, right? It's just a different way of saying it. And it's the way in other areas they've been able to maintain agriculture and open space, because it's saying, okay, I have 20 acres and I could do 4 5-acre lots, or I could put all the density in one and it allows you to do a lower acreage in whether you sell or lease that, because it's the density has not changed. And that's one of the things, is that when you explain it to people that way, it's different, even though it's the same concept of clustering. And it's working. There are some states that primarily only do that. And it's the way rural and I know Lee Nellis does a great job of explaining this concept way better than I would, or giving the examples. But I do think it's a really strong avenue for us to look at.
Okay, great, clustering. Okay, can we, let's see, I'm just going to look at the time. We've got an hour into this, so I'm going to limit to an hour and a half, maybe a little more than that for this meeting. Let's just continue down the list just a little bit so that we can maybe get some more thoughts that I wanted to kind of get going here. The good areas to develop. Any of them. Is there anyone that particularly sticks out in the list here? So the ID of land. Oops.
You want to make it larger, phone?
No. Okay. So I'm side concerned. Utilities. We've talked about that. And you know, water and all that. Considering. I think that the non-mobile manufacturing homes, that's allowable at this point. And getting involved in an organization where it sounds like the housing organization that was here, the neighborhood, they prefer to actually own the land and then they manage it. So that's one of the but if someone wanted to give them the land, or maybe even lease them the land, that might be an option. I don't know, but something to look into.
She would know if there's any opportunities or what options are around ADU, getting money for ADUs that are pegged to
affordable.
She would be worth talking
to. And I think it would be worth talking to her about the idea that Stephanie brought up of like long term, like, right, maybe that they don't own it, but we have a lease that's 20 years or like, you know, whatever that minimum might be. But because people might be more interested in something like that, where they're not interested in giving or selling cheaply.
Or selling at all. I mean, I think a lot of the land, you know, I mean, like Rod Peterson comes to mind as somebody who would be interested in chunking off a piece for a long-term lease. But due to the family dynamics, there's no way that it's going to get sold. They can't sell it, but they could do a long-term lease because it's all still within the trust. And I think there's probably quite a bit of land in this town that's in that situation where a long-term lease is viable and amenable to the family, but trying to chunk 5 acres off and create a new lot would be a total family nightmare. And there's no way they would consider, it's not worth it.
Well, as long as it's not subdivided, you solve a lot of your problems that you've been talking about. I mean, if they're just developing within their trust or within, you know, their LLC or whatever, you know, you don't trigger all those requirements for subdivisions, right? For leasing or renting.
Right.
It's where if you're going to cut it out for sale that you run into a lot of these problems and incur expenses that make it unrealistic. So as far as that, leasing, renting.
Okay, we'll definitely talk to NeighborWorks about what's available.
And Dave.
And Dave Conine.
And Stephanie's asking, have we looked at hiring a professional grant writer? I hear money can be hard to find, Mark, but there are funds out there.
Yeah, the state's actually got some funds. They just passed, I think, the last legislature, and now they got a new legislature starting, I think, this week.
And there's more talking about more.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know the parameters that are, you know, what's all involved. Usually it's not quite as easy as they make it seem when you see it on TV, but it would be worth looking into.
Okay, I'll put that on our list of finding out more about that.
Are there any comments, questions, things that people want to bring up that haven't yet gotten to speak or haven't spoken as much as other people? Peg, you should just unmute and talk.
I've got a couple comments, but the main one probably is simply that I would encourage people in this group in terms of vision to at least join the Zoom on Planning Commission meetings the first hour where Lee Nellis is talking about these issues, because he does bring up a lot of these points that you've addressed tonight. He's discussed things. There is some detail to the information he's been able to impart. So I think that would be useful for everyone here to at least spend an hour on Planning Commission the first hour listening to him. But beyond that, what he had said earlier was, if you took Boulder's current available land and chunked it all up into 5 acre parcels, there would be, he scoped out, there would be basically 450 new parcels of land developable by maximum development within Boulder town limits at the 5 acre minimum that we have. And the control on that would seem to be water and septic, and the safety factor of every individual, well, at least a good percentage of those individuals drilling their own wells, because some of them won't be accessible to Boulder Farmstead, and every single one of them drilling in their own septic systems. So I think if this group is talking about community visions and goals and so forth, I think that one of the things on our plate here is to at least discuss and think about eventually a municipal water system and a municipal waste system. I think that if Boulder, regardless of growth, I think Well, Boulder will grow, and hopefully it won't grow 450 lots more on top of it. But I don't think this town, Boulder Town, could handle that many new septic systems in and amongst all of our various private wells. And I think that's a major, on the one hand, maybe it's a control factor, but it's also a very serious safety and health factors. So I would like that consideration to be on the table as well. We're trying to solve a housing problem, and we're looking at land and so forth and ways to address that. But every time you add a new house, you're adding a new septic system, and you may or may not be adding a private well. And think about that.
Could I address that?
Sure, go ahead.
So this is what Peg's talking about now. Is she's not talking about affordable housing so much, she's talking about growth. And you know, right. And Josh pointed to this idea of so a 3% growth rate is a good rate. 2% is even better. But again, you know that compounds over time, right? You realize that, right? It's not like, right. You know, it compounds. So it gets bigger.
No one here would agree, in this whole town would agree that a 2% growth rate for Boulder is healthy. That'd be doubling in 20 years.
Yeah. Well,
One here would say that sounds good.
So I just addressed that, but it's a growth issue. And I mean, I was disturbed when Ian Nelson did this. We kind of said, well, we can have this many 5-acre lots if we don't, do something, that's why we don't want to get too crazy about like the fact that we're not going to have all those sort of, everything's not going to be 5-acre lots, right? If you can keep the growth factor, if you keep the growth rate down by not getting too crazy about what you do, then you can adapt and grow into it slowly. If you get that growth rate out of hand, or you get too liberal in terms of development, then you're looking at these issues that Peg says, a bigger water system, wastewater system. Once you've gone that route, then you've really opened up the floodgates. And it didn't have to happen that way. It can happen slow. You can grow into these things, even these hot housing opportunities. For some amazing, some kind of magic, people come, they stay. If they stay here long enough and they try hard enough, it seems like they fall into situations, And we all know these situations. I mean, Elena and Dylan and Tony and Nina and these people have come and they found places. It's not like nobody's ever finding a place. I never thought that Zoe and Dusty would fall into a situation. They did. These opportunities come along. And so it would seem to me you kind of want to try to, you want to address these issues, but you don't want to start creating false opportunities. Look for the opportunities as they come. And, this idea of we have the ADUs are there. It seems like that is something to focus on, and I would say that along with the fact of, with the service industry, the commercial users, the employers helping provide some of this housing, those are two basic ideas. And
so I guess my question then, Mark, would be that a landowner has the opportunity to subdivide their property, and right now it's 5-acre lots, and I know, for instance, that Vivian is now under some legal disputing, thing. Mm-hmm. And that family is actually, or that group of people are actually, their lawyer called the planning commission and said, okay, so what can we do? And basically it's 5-acre lots. Or, talk to us about other options. But, if you have a group of people and they want it divided up, then 5-acre lots is the easiest way to do it right now. And we don't have any control over that. This town doesn't really have any control over that.
Well, this is where, they called you up. They says, well, what's our possibility? Did you talk about cluster?
Yeah. No, They didn't call us.
Oh.
Their lawyer called us.
Okay.
And you know, I think John, oh, I can't remember who talked to him, but that, yeah, he said, well, ultimately, it's a 5-acre. Peg, do you want to talk about that? Or?
Well, that's about all I can say. Yeah, they called me, and the question was, what is legal in town to how many, how we've got 30 acres, how much can we subdivide? And the answer is 5-acre lots. And yes, I did bring up that the Planning Commission is interested in exploring other options, but right now those aren't, that's not in the ordinance, and the ordinance says 5-acre lots. So that's what we have right now. That's all they, so who knows when they're going to come back with any kind of proposal, but that was, that's the answer we can give them right now. And I don't want anyone to misunderstand about the 450 possible. I mean, no one wants to see that kind of growth. That was kind of the point, is that with our existing ordinances, that is what is possible. And all it takes is for someone to come along with, you know, a lot of bucks and approach one of the families that has a lot of acreage and make a offer. And there's absolutely nothing that Planning Commission or the town of Boulder can do to thwart that. It's between the landowner and the buyer, period. So unless we do change our ordinances, we have situations we may not like that we have to deal with. So that was my point. It's not like I want that to happen, but if any kind of, I do want people to attend to the notion of more houses. We want them for the people, that's a relatively small number of people that are looking for things right now. And just pay attention to the need to be attentive to safety and health in terms of septic and private wells and their proximity to each other, et cetera, et cetera. That was all I was saying.
Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, to follow up on those comments, and I think Mark mentioned clustering, and clustering comes up, and there's generally a supportive attitude towards clustering in this town, though it's never really happened. One thing I want to caution people on, and to follow up on Peg's comment about water and sewer, without building a treatment plant, which I'm not recommending, if everything that gets built here needs to be connected to a septic system, that needs to be looked at very carefully if the Planning Commission or the town is approving a subdivision that uses clustering. The how they're going to deal with that waste has to be something that the developer takes care of, not leaving it up to each individual parcel owner that now has a small parcel instead of a large parcel. So we've had one come before us already, and it left it to the buyers to take care of that. So if we're going to approve clustering, we better give a lot of attention to septic and how that's going to be dealt with in the subdivision. That's my comment.
Yeah. And roads.
Yeah, roads are big.
Yeah.
I also think we shouldn't lose Peg's point of, regardless of agree or disagree with the essence of what Lee Nellis is saying, it's an opportunity for people to come to the first hour and be educated in the topics and what are possibilities, and to understand things fully. And so the more educated we are as a collective group, the better we can work towards this vision as a collective. And that is a really great opportunity, because we have a professional advisor that has access and resources and an understanding of these topics.
And this, our meeting will be put into minutes and sent to him as well. So, okay, let's see.
I have a question
about Sure.
the comments that, you know, you posted.
Uh-huh.
I read Catherine Smith's comments. What's going on?
Catherine Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, I totally missed them.
Oh, you did?
Jay's hands up as well.
Okay, Jay, go ahead. Mark's going to get him.
Thanks. Appreciate it. It's been good to listen to hear everybody's comments, and it's good food for thought. For me, I'm just kind of absorbing. I do think my one suggestion is, I know I made the, you know, what are short-term, long-term goals, but I think more importantly, what are our goals, objectives, and our action items for this group? I mean, we only have so much time, and I think that, you know, we should at least define some things that we want to do. Tina, I think it was you. I could have that wrong, but what does the general plan say? How can we tighten that up? What suggestions should we be making? I think that's a really good goal. You know, that's one I can see. So, I mean, I guess I'm just throwing out there that for this working committee, what is it we want to accomplish? I think it would be good to define a few of those, you know, one, two, or three of those by the end of this meeting, and then, you know, work towards if there's anything more moving forward. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
I like that, Jeff, Jay.
Me too. Mark, did you want to share something?
Were those posted? Where did you find them?
No, they're just to him.
I think they're just to me, but I don't know what she's talking about. Yeah. But I thought it had to do with the planning issue. And, you know,
that's a private conversation between you and Catherine.
I guess it is, but I don't know what she's talking about.
Feel free to share.
Okay. I'll look at it after the meeting. How's that? So let's go with Jay's comments quickly. And so I think the things that come to my mind is how we consider improving the possibility of a limited amount of rentals. Is that one of the things that we need to look into? A limited amount of rentals with possibly the idea of lease. So I should get that information, more information about that, correct? And maybe we should review that a little bit more.
And I think that people on this committee can also do a little bit of homework between now and then. It doesn't necessarily have to be you or Colleen because you're the Planning Commission representatives. If anyone is willing and or able to do a little bit of stuff to present to the group, either in an email or at the next meeting, it might be helpful.
Yeah.
So one of the questions I had when I listened to her, Charlene's presentation and also Dave Conine's presentation about rentals based on income was how you manage such a thing. You know, if you have low income rentals that get a subsidized rate, then in a year they get a new job, three times as much money. What happens? They have to move out?
That's part of their lease and contract with her as right. The neighbor works. I asked her that question at that open house, and she said that and she's been doing this for like 30 some years, right. And she has not seen it, but it is part of the lease agreement, right. That it would change it. And right. It wouldn't be like immediately you're kicked out, but there is a time frame. And right. That's a follow-up question that if you want to share it, I don't remember, but we were talking about it. Colleen and I went to the open house for the one she did in Escalante.
If that happens, that's okay, but then you've lost your...
Yeah.
You know, if the rent goes up, that's okay. Compensates for their, you know, that...
No, but you can't... There's a ceiling. To be in those that are considered it, if you're making more than a certain amount, you no longer are eligible to be living in them because you can then afford other options. Right. It doesn't mean that the percentage is based on your income. So when your income goes up, they're making more money off of you. It means that you now need to find alternative housing, and that becomes available for the people on, because they have waiting lists for those rentals.
Yeah, that was my big take home from her presentation, is managing these is not trivial.
No, and that's like all on her.
All the regulatory crap and tax returns and making sure they qualify and that they check all the boxes for the 10 different agencies that fund you.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
That's it.
Yeah. That's a whole thing.
They're nonprofit.
Yeah.
So we could find 1,000 nonprofits that would come in here and give us different ideas about what we could do here. We just picked that nonprofit because she's familiar with our community in the state of Utah. You know, and you're right. They have an incredible program.
But you need a nonprofit. That was, yeah. You know, it's like you need someone to, this isn't like, Joe Schmo ADU owner is going to enforce, like it's, especially if there's grant money involved, then it's like really a lot.
And it's the bank because her company is the one that gets the mortgage out, but you're paying Neighbor Works and she's in between it. So they also deal with if people are late on payments and she has some that are rentals only and some that are rent to own and some that are ownership right out that she manages the mortgage. And she also works with people like if there's a hardship that comes, like what's currently happening in the economy, how do you help those families as opposed to just kicking them out? And that's all they do. And so it's using those types of organizations because no one here can do that.
Yeah. Like it would be a lot to reinvent that locally.
Yeah.
You know, that was like, wow, okay. We don't want to do that.
And they're successful across the county, not to mention the state. But I mean, they've been quite a few across the county, and that partnership between the county and her nonprofit and so on is building and growing. And so it's a good opportunity for us.
Yeah, to use them.
But it sounds like
more into them.
But basically, it can't be on purchased land financially here. It's just not going to work. Like our lot sizes are too big and the land's too expensive. And our zoning doesn't currently allow it. Like we can't build a fourplex here now.
Yeah. And Escalante could and Tropic could and City could. And
so Neighbor Works on purchased land would only work if we had like a fourplex thing.
Yes.
And, or if they wanted to, you know, as far as like Lee was saying too, we have an ADU, but even changing wording as a duplex is the same thing as an ADU, you know, as far as that goes. And would they fall under that? And I'm not saying that's what we should do, but those are the things you would have to do.
Right. And like if a situation came that someone asked for a fourplex on a piece of property, what guidelines do we give on that kind of thing too? I mean, what would that mean for us as a community to allow that? If somebody kept 5 acres and they wanted to put a fourplex on it, is that an inappropriate for our community vision?
Right. And you know, the irony being like the big house, Lake's Place, it's pretty much that. Fourplex,
yeah.
pretty much, that's what that is.
Yep. Right. The only thing, and I remember that was the only requirement there was only one kitchen.
Well, it was
for that reason.
The definition of family was changed at that point to become more inclusive. Because I remember that too.
Well, and then that leads to like if, you know, I don't know, but Mark mentioned earlier that had some vacancies, but that's a big thing with the school and figuring out housing, and I assume other places, that if you have people that either have families or are older, are not interested in living with other people in shared kitchens, but they would live with other people in a duplex type style situation or an ADU type situation, but they're not interested in shared space. And so you lose opportunity of people for those when it's communal living.
Well you also have people that worked there that you're not talking about either right now that actually do live here now.
Yeah.
And they have, so they had last year an amount of people that lived here and did not need to live in the big house.
Yes.
So you have to take all those factors into why things happen. It's not just one. It's generally more than one. Well, and
one of the things that the employee housing idea, it serves the need, but it also avoids some of the other problems with like duplexes and fourplexes and that kind of high density, because you know, Lee said, well, we can zone certain areas for those, right? But he forgot to tell you that you can do that, but you can't stop somebody from rezoning their property. You know, it's very difficult to stop somebody from rezoning their property. You know, this is why you have you see so many rezonings every week in the newspaper. You know, if somebody wants to rezone their property, if they want to submit an application for rezoning, then if you already allowed something to happen, right, and somebody wants equality, wants to rezone the property, it could, to accomplish the same kind of situation, it's hard to zone against that. And, you know, I'd like to hear Lee address that, because I don't think he's really addressed that, but this is customary. You know, if you have a minimum, that's, you have a, it's kind of like a firewall. 5 acre used to be kind of a firewall, right? Then you kind of broke down that firewall by calling ADUs, but it wasn't really a subdivision, right?
Right.
It's just an additional use. Definitely. When you start allowing, when you start breaking off properties for a total different use of high density, right? Then I'm, you know, you can zone for that. And cities do that all the time. You know, R1, R2, R4, R50, right? But if somebody comes along and says, well, okay, I want to rezone my property from agricultural to residential, you know, and then from there to high density residential, I'm just not quite sure how you can stop that. And I'd like to make a note to Lee Nellis to explain just how he thinks that you can stop that sort of
Okay, we'll do that. Stephanie, do you want to?
Yeah, I just wanted to cast my vote behind the idea of multifamily homes up to fourplexes. I just sold a fourplex that I owned in Providence, Rhode Island, and I think it's a really great model for home ownership, for having, you know, especially for someone who's doing a new build. It's not a whole lot more expensive to build 4 2-bedroom apartments than an 8-bedroom house that there's currently no restrictions on. You know, then you have one building instead of 4. You have one septic system. If you're within, you know, a reasonable square footage, I think that's our very best option, both for, you know, housing for people who can't afford to buy a 5-acre lot and need some passive income to make it happen. I just think that's probably the path of least resistance, personally, to getting some more rentals and without changing the face of Boulder a whole lot. So that's all.
Thank you. All right. So
yes, I was just noting the time.
Okay, so we've been to an hour and a half, and I'd like to just kind of have everybody, as Jabe said, have sort of a focus we're going towards going forward. I guess I would suggest that the idea of what's actually in our cluster development situation and what would make it better is something that the Planning Commission is looking at. It might be something to look into.
We got kicked down and back in. The internet glitched.
Oh.
That was all.
Okay.
Tina, you might want to repeat what you said. Did people that are online, did you lose what Tina was saying? Because the internet here glitched out.
Any comments?
Just a blip. Yeah, so.
It's a blip. Okay. So, again, I just would like to make kind of a direction that we want to go as far as getting more information on and presenting possibly at the next meeting. Is that kind of what Jabe was talking about, right? Direction, focus? Yeah, okay.
I also think we need to get more information from Elena.
Yeah. See what's happening. Okay. Yeah.
It's important because that is a group of people that were interested in finding out what they have to say.
Yeah, I think that communication between the different groups.
Yeah, and also what, and we'll have more information on that at from our next meeting for sure, because that's on
the agenda. Two comments that I believe in, if anyone else is online that I missed one, but two that got chatted on the group chat that have not yet been brought up. Peg says, I definitely want to consider land trusts that would have to be operated as a nonprofit or under the umbrella of an existing nonprofit. This would be a long-term objective. Dave wrote, I agree with Peg, good long-term objective. And then Peg earlier wrote, when Mark, in reference to when Mark was talking about the tax break for second homes, she said, I don't think so. Non-primary residential dwellings pay almost twice as much in property taxes. And I think they were the only two that I noticed that didn't get addressed. And so if I missed any, somebody should speak up.
And the last one was?
That's Jabe saying I agree with Peg's long-term goal. And these get saved in the recording, the chat, so right. You can get pull these from Peg's.
And then you might want to reiterate that we're meeting again in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was kind of the plan, is to actually meet February 1st, which I'm sorry is a Wednesday again, but... We have meetings the following two Thursdays. So,
is it possible to do the Tuesday or not? It's totally possible, just the day before.
I have no objection to that. I think I can put a notice out and.
Just the town council, I often only usually have the night before to prepare for the meeting.
Okay.
So, having this the night before town council is challenging for me, but. That doesn't mean it should hold up everybody else.
Okay, so that would be the
hardship on the night before that.
January, the last day or January, yeah.
I don't. If things don't come out in advance, then I don't have an opportunity to prepare.
So January 31st.
Okay, I'll put a note out for that and 6 o'clock. Yeah. Okay, so in that meeting, we will continue down. Let's try and make this next meeting. The first thing that comes to mind is more positive on the idea of options that we feel strongly about pursuing, and if there's objection to that, then that's great. We can discuss that. But I'm thinking of taking what we've talked about tonight and listing for ourselves the things or directions that basically we feel comfortable with pursuing as far as a community. And I understand that we are a community that doesn't want to grow quickly, that has grown quite slowly for the last 33 years, in my opinion. Sure. But also the idea of dividing land, in my opinion, is something that, really should be considered with geographic identification. And the Planning Commission is working at having not so much zoning, the idea of not having as much zoning, as in looking at the individual pieces of property and what things could work in those pieces of property that would be more applicable to our community vision. So again, it would be great to listen in on our Planning Commission meetings. But so on that point, thinking of cluster development and what that would actually look at, how many if someone was going to divide a piece of property, what would be a better situation than dividing it in 5 acres in limitations of dividing property? And how the growth rate, how would we help, how could the town actually make any kind of stab at litigating that kind of situation for growth in Boulder, other than actually going into the finding the statistics that only so much water is available and only so much septic is available to some point in.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
So we already have someone that's interested in coming here and trying to help us, which is NeighborWorks. I think we need to talk to them more, and not talk to them, but what would it take to bring NeighborWorks into our community? Because they've been in so many other communities and they seem to be successful. And what would it take? Because they are interested in coming here.
Yeah, and I think that's, they're actually the ones that are going to be approached for the school project.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any better ideas on what else we want to pursue this?
I want to say one final thing is that I think we've all seen what's happened all around us, Escalante, Panguitch, everything in that direction, all that clear down through Zion to St. George. We're seeing what's happened over in Torrey. We've seen what's happened all around us, and we aren't doing so bad. And I think there's a reason for that. And I want you to think hard on why we haven't fallen into that trap yet. Because, you know, we've all been around here long enough to see what happened to Escalante. I mean, you can't deny it. And Torrey, you know, and it's happening all around us. And yet Boulder kind of seems to have dodged a lot of bullets. And I think there's a reason for that. So I just want you to think about why that might be that we've been able to dodge these bullets so far.
Because we're so ornery.
Well,
I want you to consider this. So there used to be some ideas about renaming Boulder, you know. And so one of the name I came up, you ever thought about what you call Boulder other than Boulder?
No.
Because you've seen Aurora, right? A proud little town.
Uh-huh.
Right. And you've seen these towns that have these little slogans.
Slogans, yeah. And I think it'd be fun to, you know, to have that. But I always thought that the perfect renaming of Boulder would be, well, not renaming, but called Boulder, and our slogan would be a schizophrenic little town.
Better keep them out.
and it's also kind of true. It might give people a double take on why they want to come to Boulder. Anyway.
Okay, I think I'll let us go. I think we've put our minds to this as far as we're going to get now, and I will put out a overview of our meeting, and I hope that everybody will continue to add their 2 cents in emails so that when we get together, we actually have information we've reviewed a little bit too, as far as, and know a little bit more about what each of us has been thinking about on this project of vision of our community.
Jake says, thanks everyone.
Thanks, Jay. Thank you, everyone. That was great. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.